Born and raised in Kansas City, he's followed the Chiefs his entire life. He's seen all but one of the Chiefs' Super Bowl wins. 30 years later, he's still following the Chiefs, except now he gets paid to do it. He's our Chiefs insider, Nate Taylor of The Athletic, on the program.
Everything in that intro is true, except for what's the curveball? That's not Seren. No, it's not. I'm Joshua Briscoe, filling in for Seren today. Rudy Salazar on the other side of the glass, filling in for Jed. Curtis, irreplaceable. We just have a chair empty for him in case he wants to wander in. But Nate Taylor of The Athletic does join us now. You can follow him on Twitter, at @ByNateTaylor. You can read all of his work in The Athletic. You can also, of course, check out the incredibly excellent, fully staffed, full of handsome, talented people, The Times Are His podcast with Nate Taylor, Seth Kaiser, and somebody else. It's me. The joke is that it's me. Nate, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great, and I don't know who the host of that podcast is, but you sound eerily familiar right now. But no, man, I'm doing fine. Happy early 4th of July weekend, our country's Independence Day, and just gonna grill and hope that my son will go to sleep once fireworks start popping off.
I could hear what sounded like a bit of dread in your voice, and there it showed. That's what it was. It's how long will it take for Hayden to go to sleep? Do you remember what happened last year? Was last year a struggle?
Last year wasn't as much of a struggle because, you know, we had just moved from Miriam, Kansas to Overland Park, mostly a quiet neighborhood, mm-hmm. although sources have told me someone has bought a lot of fireworks. So this year will be different for a number of reasons. We may partake in that. So don't tell the authorities, but I have it on good authority that a friend somewhere near me has a lot of fireworks. So it may be different this year, but I'm sure I'm not alone in this struggle.
Yeah.
To try to get your child, you know, let's just be real. He didn't take a nap today,
yeah.
So we're already off to a rousing start to the weekend. And who knows if he'll take a nap tomorrow? Who knows if he'll go to sleep tonight? I'm just gonna have to drink a lot of coffee tomorrow to get through what will probably be the longest he stays up during the summer, which is, you know, like around 10:30, and then hopefully his body will wear out. Who knows how this week is going to go, but it's already off to a great start.
How old is Hayden right now?
So Hayden's 4. He'll be 5 next month. And
okay.
So usually his birthday is one of the longer days of the year. I know that you know, historically it's in June, but for me, folks, it's in early August where I wake up super early, say happy birthday to him, get in my car, drive like, you know, an hour and 15 minutes to St. Joseph. By the way, not doing that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they would have practice. Like, Andrew Reed would never, you know, consider my family's, you know, situation. He would always have practice on August 7th. And then I'd drive back, have a whole night with the family, and, you know, do a whole party thing. So, so he's gaining strength in the fight against never taking another nap when he's at home.
That 4 going on 5 range feels like a pretty big age for being enamored with fireworks, but is still probably too young. Like, I don't think there's like a little kid firework that you can let him light off yet. Like, I feel like that's still probably a couple years away. So that's probably
right.
I guess you could have him do like one of the little snakes that look like a little charcoal tablet that then turns in. It's the worst firework that exists, but I think that's the one that would be safe for like a 4.5 year old.
Right. I mean, who knows what I was doing when I was 4 or 5. I mean, I'm guessing they gave me sparklers of some kind or, you know, bottle rockets were probably introduced way too early in one's life. You know, it's funny you mention that just because, like, he won't do anything other than, like, observe at the hilariousness that is, like, okay, so, Dad, why do we do this once a year? Where, like, I don't understand the significance, but all of a sudden there's just black cats everywhere. And
yeah.
It's like, well, son, you know, back in like the 1700s, we're just gonna do this today and only today. You know, like there's no like real way to tell a 4 year old like, oh, like, no, see, like there was the British and like we thought like, oh, Jesus, man, I'm gonna go across the pond. Like, man, I can't get through all of it. they'll tell you in school, probably not correctly, but who cares? You know, like, he'll be fine. But 4th of July every year, or July 3rd, on a Friday before the holiday, you know, people were just going to pop fireworks for God knows how long. I think the other thing, too, that involves my son is that I just don't want him to be Terry. Like, that's who I am as a father. Like, my job is to not be Terry, which means, one, you don't get close to the fireworks. Two, you don't light the fireworks. And three, if in God's way, in some way, shape, or form, you find a way to just back up, Terry. Back up. Back up, Terry. Hopefully enough people know what I'm talking about in terms of the meme video. That is my favorite. Like, a lot of people like to mention, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul, for obvious reasons, kind of had a situation with his hand, although his hand is very important to him, you know, making a living like the rest of us. I just like to think of Terry. Just back up, Terry. Just hit the button, Terry. Back up! Oh, God, Terry.
Ready for a professional radio segue that I imagine Seren would be proud of? You talk about fireworks, Nate. The Chiefs have certainly had some fireworks of their own this week. Also, happy birthday to Chris Jones. I don't know if you saw, it is Chris Jones' birthday today. What do you think? What do you think his birthday wish is, Nate?
That they would, man, you know, there can't be enough candles on that cake, Josh.
He needs 21 million candles per year.
I, you know, the shout out to the Katz brothers. So this is like a little inside football, but like, you know, Michael Katz is like, you know, Chris Jones's agent. They've been through it from like draft day on board. And, you know, because I'm following this mini side before an offseason, the Katz brothers are like, and it was like 12:01 my time. And so clearly, I thought like maybe the Chiefs would promote something today, although the NFL's Twitter account has done like, hey, here's his mixtape of highlights. And the Chiefs are like, what you doing, dog? Like, we don't need everybody to see this.
I haven't even seen that. That's very good.
So, yeah, like, they, you know, Chris, there's not enough candles, but clearly he wants to be paid. Clearly he wants this to be the start of quite a magnificent season where not only does he get generational wealth, possibly the Chiefs to another Super Bowl championship, and there's no drama whatsoever between those two things happening.
I just saw that, yes, there's just a full Chris Jones highlight tape on the NFL's Twitter account right now. Oh, spectacular. He's asking for 22 now. within the
Chris
little...
Jones has never had a bad play. Let me say it to me.
We had that little back and forth for a couple days of some national writers being like, I'm reporting that Chris Jones wants Frank Clark money, and that you were just like sitting at home just like throwing a tennis ball against the wall just waiting for something new to happen. Because you've been talking about that for like literally since last like Frank Clark signed, and you're like, Chris Jones wants that now. I'm like, okay, cool.
Right.
But then that goes around for a couple days. Then Chris Jones has his tweet. Has anything evolved for you at all in these last few days? And did anything change whenever Chris Jones kind of went public with I would say his side of the story?
Yeah, I think the one big thing, and like this is somewhat of the editorial news judgment that I have to go through when things like this happen, because like you said before, like it's been known for a while, at least from my standpoint, what we put on the Athletic. Here's kind of what the situation is. Nothing's really going to change between now and July 15th, which I still think he probably won't get a long-term deal, you know, ironed out with the Chiefs, and he'll be forced to either play on the franchise tag or sit out a year similar to Le'Veon Bell. Now, there's clear differences between both situations, but I think the biggest thing that happened earlier this week was Jones alluding to the fact that he has one card left in his deck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's playing Goldfish, and he ain't got a lot of cards yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the understanding is, if he doesn't get a deal done, he'll sit out. He'll hold out. He won't be around for training camp. When training camp begins, who the hell knows? It's scheduled for July 28th, but we'll see when we get there. That's really the only play he has. Like, a lot of people will say, well, maybe he held out week one, week two. Hell, maybe hold out till week three. Maybe the Chiefs aren't as good as they thought they were, or they just wake up one day and they're like, holy crap, we need Chris Jones. Like, they're still not anything that can happen in the short term to his advantage. So it's the way I see it is he's telling people in like a little bit of a trial balloon, hey guys, if it doesn't go my way on July 15th, just understand from my perspective why I won't show up to camp on time, which was the difference between a year ago when even though he kind of held out, it was kind of like a mini trial run. It's like, hey, like, you guys want to pay me? All right. What time do I got to be at camp? Fine. 2 o'clock on August 8th. Got
That's
it.
Right.
You know, like, whatever it was. So, like, he showed up right on time. But I think he's trying to prepare both the Chiefs, the fan base, and, you know, just anyone around his situation to let him know that, hey, I'm probably not going to be there if I don't get a deal on July 15th or sooner.
So with that, and you mentioned this on Times Ours as well, which is, again, worth your time if you're looking for something else to listen to right now. You can get it for free, even though it's through The Athletic. Right now we're doing one episode a week, more or less, and those are all free wherever you get your podcast. You search for Times Ours. But you mentioned that you think people should just be thinking about Chris Jones in the context of the 2020 Chiefs. Obviously, one big difference between him and Le'Veon Bell, and I think a lot of people are overblowing that. Like, whatever. Le'Veon Bell had been tagged for a second time. Chris Jones could literally sit out this season and then start back at this point again next year.
Right.
He'd get the service time, but the Chiefs could literally tag him again and then go through all this again. And he also has not made $16 million in his career yet. Another difference
right.
from Bell. So do you think that likely leads to him actually ultimately holding out for a while and then playing in 2020 under the franchise tag?
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be like a real hard discussion between, you know, like I mentioned, the Katz brothers, his agents, and Chris. And I'm sure that discussion may have happened right after the combine, because it was pretty clear that although the Chiefs were pretty much going to put the franchise tag on him, again, that sort of limits Chris from having any options, because, one, you can't go through free agency. Two, you may not even have him next year because of what you mentioned, Josh, that, hey, that we can tag him into this whole situation again. And, yeah, at some point, you can make $16 million playing football. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of guys can do that. It's unfortunate because if you get injured, there ain't no way you're getting any of that money back from a long-term deal that was sort of a potential option on the table. I think, and I sort of mentioned this on Times Ours, that there's no reason for him to really be there for training camp. There's really no reason for him to be there in the preseason, whether it's one game, two games, no games. Come September 10th, especially because it's banner night, even if there are no fans in the stands, if they have that game, it's a ring ceremony, it's a championship, it's all those good feelings you had back in February when there was little knowledge of a global pandemic occurring in front of our eyes, and you won a Super Bowl. How much is he going to be enticed, intrigued, and sort of persuaded by his fellow teammates, i.e., you know, Frank Clark, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Tyrann Mathieu? How much of those guys are going to say, it's a screwed up situation, but, you know, we want you to be a part of our, you know, run it back tour? He's going to have to make a decision sometime in September as to whether or not it's wise for him financially and to just keep his name in the discussion moving towards next year to play football. Now, the Chiefs will say, not publicly, but the understanding is, hey, if you play well on a franchise tag of $16.1 million, let's say we get at least back to the AFC Championship game at worst, right? We can find somewhere to trade you that you can get close to the $20 million that you're seeking, which I think is the baseline. Like, it's got to be 20 at the minimum. And obviously, if you go up, that will please Chris and his family moving forward. But I think if he plays out the year and things go well and he's a good teammate as he's been all 4 years and he's a professional, which he has proven to be nothing but that word so far, the Chiefs may have more of an incentive to trade him next offseason than they did this year when they were trying to keep most of the core back to see if they can repeat as champions.
Yeah, so do you think that is the most likely outcome then? If he does play under the tag in 2019 or in 2020, that happens through this year, they make another good run, he plays well again, and then he would have some leverage in terms of where he would go, because he could say,
right,
I'm not signing a long-term deal with this
right.
team unless they pay me, unless they're going to give me 20, 21 per year or whatever.
Right.
But you would put your money on Chris Jones plays with the Chiefs in 2020 and then somewhere else in 21 and beyond?
Yeah, so think about it in this context. I mean, in short, yes. But two people on the Chiefs organization are in really awkward situations. One of them is Eric Bieniemy because, hey, man, Like, you won a Super Bowl. Hey, man, like, you should be the leading candidate for all NFL head coaching jobs come January. But, like, you got to be a professional. You got to mostly keep your mouth shut. You got to stay excellent at your job and hope to God that somebody's like, hey, maybe he might be a good head coach. And Chris is in the same situation where you have to do all those same things. You have to show up on time when the regular season starts, probably. Play particularly well. Don't get injured. Don't be a locker room distraction. Be a good teammate. Be a professional. Still get your 8 to 10 sacks per year. Play well in the playoffs. Hopefully, you know, the team either gets back to the AFC Championship game. Hell, maybe they become the 2004 Patriots and are the, you know, the newest team to be back-to-back champions. And then shut your mouth for another couple months and then design your way to another team that will pay you top dollar because they see the value. And, yes, you raise your market, you raise sort of your leverage by saying, I'm a two-time champion, I'm a dominant defensive lineman, I'm a great guy, both in the locker room, in the community, and on the field, and, Lord, please, somebody trade me to give me $20 million.
This is a complicated question that probably has an equally complicated answer, but why is that the thing that I'm just saying that you're going to be right. That's usually safe money. Why is that the outcome? Why is it that the Chiefs trade a first-round pick for Frank Clark and then give him a deal that they could have given to Chris Jones? Why do they prioritize Anthony Hitchens and then restructure his contract, something we talked about extensively on Time's Ours? Why did they prioritize Sammy Watkins over Chris Jones? We've heard Brett Veach talk about how Chris is a priority. We've heard, I think Clark Hunt used the same word, priority, and they really haven't treated him like that compared to a lot of other guys on this team.
Yeah, it is a complicated answer, but in short, they lean more offense than defense. I mean, that's just the understanding. Like, Patrick Mahomes did so much for this city, did so much for the organization, has done so much for the league, honestly, that the team understands that, like, hey, if we have to make a difficult situation between Patrick Mahomes and or a really, really, really good defensive lineman, we're probably going to have to swing Patrick Mahomes' direction. Now, one option that I have not said yet, but would be in the rare to slim category as of now, can change. You know, both sides can come to an agreement 5 days from now, and I would be pretty shocked. Don't think that's going to happen. But a slim option is if Chris does everything right, if the Chiefs play great, if they become a dominant team, if they just slaughter the AFC, they get back to the Super Bowl and it's a tough game, but Chris Jones makes some spectacular play in the fourth quarter, like a sack or a batted ball on third down, and the Chiefs all of a sudden are hosting the Lombardi Trophy. Maybe there's so much feel-good because you know Sammy Watkins is off the books, because you know you could probably cut an older player like Eric Fisher, or, hell, even Anthony Hitchens after 3 good years of his services. Maybe there's enough feel-good that, like, the Chiefs could say, how about we do, like, 18, 19 per year, Chris?
Yeah.
And Chris sort of says, sure, why would I ever go to another team when I just won my second Super Bowl and I'm going to be playing alongside, you know, Tyron Matthew, Frank Clark, Tyreek Hill, and Patrick Mahomes for the next 3 to 4 more years after the 2020 season. Again, that's a slim chance. Again, they have the option to sort of be the sole negotiator because, of course, they'll franchise him, you know, when the free agency period starts in 2021 in the spring, and then maybe there's a chance where they come to terms next year versus this year, because, again, you will have a better understanding of the cap. I still think it's somewhat shocking. I would be, like, stunned if, like, Patrick Mahomes doesn't get his money now, because, like, go get your money now. Why would you wait another year when you can go get another contract 1 year sooner? You already got your deal now. So, like, maybe they would have, you know, Patrick Mahomes' numbers situated. They would have a better understanding of the cap in 2021 moving forward. Obviously, we would know all the, you know, financial ramifications of a, you know, a season where there weren't many fans, if none, in the stands. And maybe there's a better feeling on both sides. And they say, hey, we know last year was tough. Thank you for soldiering through me. And you've shown incredible loyalty and faith to us. And now it's time to do our part.
If that isn't the outcome, if it is rookie contract, franchise tag, and trade, or franchise tag, play under it, and then tag again, and then trade, do you think there's any any murmuring that happens among, you know, maybe it's Juan Thornhill or ends up being Mecole Hardman, although he's on the offensive side, but among any of the young defensive players especially that start to look at that and go, man, like, they brought in Frank Clark and they brought in Tyrann Mathieu and they brought in Anthony Hitchens. If I'm Charvarius Ward also, it's like, hey man, I've, you know, I've way outplayed my contract when it's time to pay me. Are you going to? Do you think that the locker room might lean an eye to that if Chris Jones ultimately has to go somewhere else to get paid?
Yeah, and I mean, the best example is look what happened to the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not apples to apples, but that team won the Super Bowl in pretty much the same context. Hey, really good defense, ton of veterans, guys that they had groomed, and then they gave a lot of money to Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you gotta do that, Doc. And so all of a sudden, it's like, I'm sorry, but, like, all these, like, really good to, like, above-average players, like, they got to go elsewhere. Or, like, yeah, if you're Juan Thornhill, you're basically playing out your rookie deal anyway because of your whole ACL injury, and that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Willie Gunn, like, let's say you pan out and you're a success, like, you're going to have to play through the life of that deal. The Chiefs will sort of give you the opposite viewpoint if this is how it all plays out, and they say, well, look, we gave Eric Berry a ton of money. How'd that go, dog?
And mm-hmm.
We did a physical attack. We looked eye to eye. We stared at each other for a long time. And we were like, fine, Justin, here's all the money, dog.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
to be fair, he almost broken the NFL sack record. They mm-hmm. really had to leverage it, but they stared him down for forever. And they were like, here's the money. And that really didn't go well.
Because, mm-hmm.
like, his production clearly sort of tapered off, and he was not the player that earned, you know, he was the player that earned that contract, but for the life of that deal, he was not going to give you the same amount of production. So there's both sides to it. I understand the argument in either way. I just think for Chris, and this is why I like pro football and pro sports more than collegiate. Everybody knows it's a business. The moment you walk through that door, the moment you understand your first year in the league and you see some of the transactions, some of the harsh decisions that are made, it is a business. So it is up for Chris and his, you know, representation to get the best deal for him if that is what it takes to move on from the Chiefs to get generational wealth. If that has a ripple effect on the locker room, that's just the consequences of doing business. And if you're a team like the Seattle Seahawks who had a great defense, and all of a sudden, year after year, you just saw less of those guys on defense return because the organization had to pay the quarterback. The organization had to become more offensive-minded, even though there was a great balance that led them to the 2013 and 14 Super Bowls. So, you know, these are tough problems. It's good that you have them because you've already hosted the Lombardi Trophy. But I think for the Chiefs, they would like Chris to be someone that can play really well on the franchise tag, and maybe they rectify it, you know, a year from now. But that's a lot to ask someone who, by the way, has overplayed his rookie contract and is ready to, you know, receive the value that he believes he's worth.
Yeah. It's kind of funny with the franchise tag. Like, that is the thing you get if you are too good. Like, if they are afraid to let you slip away, but you are too expensive to be paid in full value. Nate called it diabolical many times over on Times Ours this week. I think that's accurate. It's Nate Taylor of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at @ByNateTaylor here on Sports Radio 810. How many preseason games do you think we're going to get this year?
God, I hope it's only one. All right, guys, come on. From the players, like, if I was in the conference call right now, I'd be like, all right, fellas, look, I know we're going through protocols. I know we're thinking about testing daily versus, like, once or twice a week, maybe every other day. That's cool. I appreciate that. How are we going to handle the hotel situation? Great. All right, cool. What are we doing for flight time? Well, you know, that's still up in the air. But, like, you know, these are – we're just going to be a family. We're going to be self-bubbled. Please don't take an Uber. I got it. Like, please don't do anything crazy. All that said, no preseason games. I may find one. that's the conversation that I hope is going on. The players are like, no preseason games. And you're so like, come on, dog. And you're like, all right, man, one. We'll do one to get through sort of the new routine of how, you know, you're going to figure this out from a locker room to hotel to airplane situation. Like, I get that. You'll have 16 samples of seeing, like, what is the good practices, what needs to be modified. For fans' sake, I don't really think we need two preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sucks for guys like Derek Dieter, right? for guys on the back end of the roster. Like, even for someone like Dorian O'Daniel, like, this is a critical preseason for him because, one, he had not played much in Steve Spagnuolo's defense. This is his third NFL year, which is kind of like a make or break it for someone of his caliber when you're like a third-round pick. But, like, if he doesn't get preseason games or if he only gets one preseason game, maybe he can't showcase himself the way that he would under a normal sort of off-season training camp and obviously preseason moving up to the regular season. So it sucks for guys like those, and I'm mindful of those guys. But I think the wise thing to do is to at least have one preseason game so you're better informed as to how to attack and how to be as prepared as possible to play a regular season game. Well, there's probably going to be fans in the stadiums, and it's going to look really weird and really odd, but at least you've gone through one dress rehearsal that is super unusual, but it gets you ready for whatever the regular season sort of presents itself.
Totally different, complete third thing here, but it looks like the Washington professional football team is probably changing its name.
It's a wrap, dog. hey, checkmate, mother believer. That's basically what it is.
You have so much more confidence in Dan Snyder knowing what it feels like to take an L than I do.
Oh, it's incredible. It's like, look, I mean, I talked to my friend Ryan Clark, who also writes The Athletic a lot, and our favorite mid-2000s theme is type in Usher confessions video, kids, because that's Dan Snyder. He's like, hey, let me call you back. What are you talking about? What? How you know? Dog, I'm going to have to call you back. I'm going to have to change the name and call you back. Like, that's Dan Snyder.
Oh, that's so good.
Like, it's done. It's finito, Finn.
Do you think that right now Clark Hunt, Mark Donovan, the Chiefs in general are like just sort of have an eye kind of drifting over there, seeing how that goes? Do you think that they are different circumstances? Yeah. We've talked about it plenty, but it is still using the same group of people as a mascot, which I find a bit distasteful, to be kind, I suppose. Do you think that there's do you think there's a concern there, or at least a thought among the Chiefs, maybe like, hey, do we do something before fires come for us? Do we wait for the heat and see if it reaches us? What do you think's going on there?
If I were to advise Mark Donovan, which I'm never in that position, just want to make it clear, I respect the hell of what he's done, because as you can tell, Chiefs make a lot of money, folks. If I was to advise Mark Donovan as to what to tell Clark Hunt, I think the tomahawk chop's got to go.
Yeah.
Like, yep. I listen to my voice as I'm saying this. I know you love it, listener. I get it. It's a great thing. Like, when you see that many people in unison doing anything, it's pretty mesmerizing. Listen to me, Clark. I don't think we can do the tomahawk chop next season. By the way, there won't be any fans anyway. So maybe they'll forget in 24 months.
That is such a good point. Wow.
But, like, I think we got to get rid of it and, like, put it on pause. Or, like, have a good discussion and, like, let's just we're not going to change the name. Like, I don't think they have real threats in that regard, but I think some of their traditions, I think some of their culture will probably change on game day. And if I was that young woman who was riding war paint on Sundays, I would start revising my resume, because I'm not even sure it's appropriate to have a woman riding a horse to a tomahawk chop. So, like, I'm sorry, but, like, that's probably what I would advise you.
Yeah.
And just say, look, like, it sucks, but, like, this is the one thing we can do ahead of it so that it's not a serious problem if there are fans in the stadiums and everybody's like, but wait, the Redskins had to change their whole identity. But you out here still chopping. Okay. I mean, that would be the perception of some people, which I completely understand their viewpoints, while also understanding the Chiefs are like, we have traditions, and this is the way it's been. But, like, that lady don't need to be riding a horse on game day, and you probably don't need to be chopping in an empty stadium.
I think that's good. I think that's right. I think the empty stadium is going to be a real – there's a real silver lining there, and specifically in that regard. Nate, man, I appreciate it as always. Good luck fighting through your 4th of July, trying to make nap times happen ever again, and all the coffee you'll be consuming tomorrow.
Yes, it would. What would be great is if we popped fireworks till like 9:30, and then all of a sudden, rain just came out of nowhere, and you're like, "Well, kids, it's been great, hasn't it?"
I'll check the forecast. I don't think that's currently.
I don't think that's gonna happen. But that's what I'm. That's what I'm dreaming. It's like, hey, wasn't that cool? Wasn't that fun? Oh, what do you know? We're getting some.
You need to get on the roof with your hose on a certain like mist setting. Like, oh, we gotta. Hey, guys, we all gotta wrap it up. You 3 blocks away. Also, we're done. 9:30. We're good. This kid's gotta go to sleep.
Right.
Good
Thanks
luck.
For having me.
Good luck, Nate. Thank you for being here. You can follow him on Twitter @ByNateTaylor. He took Seth's tagline. Thanks for having me. It's Seth's thing. All in the family, though, at The Athletic. TheAthletic.com/TimesRs if you want to find a 40% off coupon for your first year at The Athletic. Also, the Times R's podcast with Nate Taylor, Seth Kaiser, and myself, wherever you get your podcast. We'll take a break. I'm Josh Briscoe, filling in for Seren Petro here in the program.
The Program with Seren Petro.
Been doing that a few years.
Cool. Long time.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into the program here on Sports Radio 810. I'm not Seren Petro. I hope that's okay with you. Joshua Briscoe filling in for Seren here for the next couple hours here on Sports Radio 810. Rudy Salazar on the other side of the glass. Not alone right now, though. Bill Brandmeier in studio with us to talk for a little bit about Ready to Play Week. It's been going on all week. We're the grand finale of this particular fireworks show here right now. How's it been going, Bill?
Yeah, this is like overtime. Like,
yeah, that's right.
I love it. It's been a long week. I've learned a lot. I've learned that I'm not cut out for this business every single day. It's been fun though. Over 20 hours of interviews. Some of the best interviews I've ever done in my life. I haven't done a ton, but now I'm pretty good at it, I guess. Maybe. I don't know.
I think you're a professional officially at this point.
I got 40 minutes with Bill Self. That was pretty good.
It's more than I've got.
I got 15 or 20 minutes with Les Miles. Hard to listen to, but actually kind of interesting. And he's a different kind of character, but really actually interesting interviewing with him. You know, he thinks a lot about his answers, and it takes him a little long, you know, so you're kind of waiting, but it's not like he's having a hard time articulating himself. He knows what
he's
thoughtful.
Wants to say. Yeah.
Anyway, Seren asked me the question, what's the most unusual thing I've learned throughout the week? Almost every single interview has had some sort of overtone or straightforward discussion about racial inequity and social justice. So that's been kind of interesting. But Ready to Play Week was a success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you shooting for, and then what can people still do if they want to get involved?
Well, the auction is still open. We've got about an hour and a half left on the auction. It's one of those museum type experiences. Go to the 810 WHB homepage. The auction link is right there right on the homepage. Look at all of those items. All of them are signed memorabilia from world champions or up and coming players. Or there's a really cool Jordy Nelson K-State jersey up there. All of those items are available. Bid. I mean, it's an easy way to give. Makes it nice that you're able to, you know, not only give to a great cause, but get something back in return. And the easiest thing to do, if you just feel like, you know, giving to kids and trying to help bring kids a summer experience, text READY, READY, READY to 26989, and it'll prompt you to give and give you an access to a fundraiser site and donate. We are raising money with the help of Will Shields and the Will It Succeed Foundation to provide kids a summer experience, a summer sports camp experience at his facility. And we just encourage everybody to look at what we're doing, take notice, look for Ready to Play Week content for the next week and or 10 days. We'll be pushing it out there. We've got podcasts available up on the 810 WHB mobile app. It's been just an incredible week. We kicked it off with Will Shields, and we just closed it with Tim Grunhard and Will Shields. So it's been fun.
And like you said, if anyone missed any of that, you can go to 810WHB.com or the 810 mobile app, click on additional programming, and all the Ready to Play shows are up in there. In fact, we're going to bring you a couple clips of it now. You mentioned Bill Self being having 40 minutes with him. We're only going to bring you about 4 minutes of Bill Self, but if you'd like the rest of it, the other 90%, some quick math, check it out in the app. But I want to hear your conversation here, at least a snippet of it, talking to Bill Self about his players getting some work done during this global pandemic.
Well, I found this out, and I could be wrong, but and you may be different than me, Bill, but if somebody is making me do something, I probably am more motivated to do it than if somebody's telling me it's a choice to do something.
Right.
And because one thing about it is with these college athletes, and you can take Kansas out of the equation. I'm talking about just in general. And we can talk about Kansas later. But just in general, there is somebody that is telling them this is what you need to do. And that somebody could be a youth league coach. That somebody could be a high school coach. That somebody could be a trainer. That somebody could be, obviously a major college or NBA coach. They're telling you what to do. Right. And you're even finding out now. You're finding out now that, you know, people are motivated by different things. And many are motivated just like, I'm not motivated to work out, but I am motivated to go to work every day.
Right.
Where these athletes, that is their job to go to work. So they're motivated to do that. But I really think that if nobody was in the stands and nobody was looking over my shoulder and nobody really cared what I was doing, I could see myself slacking off.
Sure.
And because you, the pressure you feel is even though you put pressure, you know, everybody says, well, you can't put as much pressure as I put on myself. Everybody says that. And I do think that could be true. But the bottom line, the outside pressures also add to the pressure you put on yourself.
Well, I watched The Last Dance, and no one put more pressure on himself than Michael Jordan, right? But then again, Michael Jordan motivated every single player he played with, right? And they wouldn't have been as good. They wouldn't have been as good without someone like Michael showing them how it's done.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. But I think our guys are pretty much self-starters in that way. I'm excited to see which guys are working, which aren't. The thing that's different, I think this is easier for me than for many, is that my guys have ultimate goals to do this for a living.
Right.
Where the vast majority of kids don't have that goal. They have it for activity. They have it to get, you know, for a college kid, you have it to get your education paid for. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things where my guys are thinking, hey, if I don't do this, I won't have a chance to do what I want to do for the rest of my earning power or whatever, and to set myself up with my family. So they have been, our guys have been brainwashed a certain way. Others have been brainwashed other ways, and there's no right or there's no wrong. It's just I think it's easier for me, for my guys sometimes to get up and go do that than it would be, let's say, a walk-on football player or a walk-on basketball player that just wants to be part of a team and hopefully get their degree. Right. Or a high school reserve or a junior high kid that hopes they make the team. You know, it's a little bit different. And so being a self-starter and having some self-discipline, I think, is more important now than it ever has been.
So of your current players, who do you think has that most – that will take that responsibility the most? Who do you know, without a doubt, they're going to show up ready?
David McCormick.
Yeah, he works.
Been the hardest worker since he's been here. You know. So David McCormick. I would say for sure. I think there's others too, but I mean, just to be real candid with you, the definition of work in some people's mind is not our definition of what work is. You know. I remember when we went up to watch the Twins practice. And we watched them practice for 2 hours, Marcus and Markeith, and they came over and they asked me and Dooley, okay, guys, what'd you think? And Dooley says, on a scale of 1 to 10, they said, yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think of our practice today? And he said, a -3. If you do that one day here, we will run you off. And they were like, going, what are you talking about? We work our ass off, you know, but it's just a different world. But David McCormick has that. I think Ochai's got it without question. He wants to be good, really bad. But you know, the Silvio, the Mitch, the Christian, the Tristan, the Jalen.
I mean,
there's
great
so
guys.
Many others.
They're so good.
They have it.
Yeah.
They have it, but I don't know that I've seen them personally have it unless I'm around. I know David went from weighing 320 to 250 pounds by setting his own diet and doing all. I mean, I know that. Mm-hmm. But the other ones, I don't, I mean, they say they're doing it, but we can't really know if they're doing it to the same level, because if you practice, if you go out and shoot for an hour, you don't get any better unless you practice shooting the way that you're going to shoot in a game. And so, okay, so right. And it's just a little different, but I think most of our guys are probably very good at it.
A little bit of Bill Self with Bill Brandmeier, who's in studio with us right now as a part of Ready to Play Week. Again, if you missed any of that, you can go to 810WHB.com or the 810 mobile app, click on additional programming, and hear more from them. You also had a chance to talk to the mayor for a little bit, Bill.
Yeah, you know, no envy in his job. I'm not jealous of the situation that he's found himself in. He's a young man, 35 years old, took on the job last year, won the race, became mayor of Kansas City, our 55th mayor, I think. And, you know, he's challenged. He is facing not only a crisis of global proportion, but also in the streets there's unrest and there's this civil disobedience, but also a really significant discussion going on about racial injustice and the fact that Black Lives Matter. So this conversation was really good, and I felt really lucky to be able to have him come on. The one thing about Mayor Lucas is he played college, he ran track in college, so he understands the power sports has in a young person's life to help change the trajectory of who they are, what they are all about. He has used sports to better himself and also to elevate himself to the position of the chief executive of our city. So, it was really cool. It was really great to have him.
Let's hear a clip from it here. He talked to you a little bit about his first experiences dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Go back. You know, first of all, it was incredibly surreal. So as a sports guy, and any of you who know Kansas City, the springtime, particularly once you get to March, is such an amazing time in Kansas City. Big 12 tournament, we were going to have some great March Madness games, NAIA tournament. I mean, just it is when Kansas City really like opens up for the first time of the year. And to lose that, to cancel it, to scuttle all of it, was something that no mayor ever wants to do. And I will tell you, by the way, who I was the least popular with for about a week or two were all of the brides-to-be of Kansas City. Because when we made an order that canceled all the weddings, you know, you shut down school and people would be all right. But some bride who's 2 weeks from getting married, and she's like, I went through all of this stuff. It was tough. But, I will say this. We didn't have time to actually equivocate and go through all that. You just had to make decisions. We made a pretty early decision in connection with issuing a stay-at-home order. We did that about the same time that New York City did, and they, even by then, had tons of cases, tons of deaths, and we said we didn't want that here. And it wasn't just because I was looking at a place like New York. I was looking at New Orleans, a metro area that's a little smaller than ours that had thousands of infections at a time that we didn't at all and has a lot more deaths as a result of it. So I think we acted right. I tried to always let people know where I was coming from. We tried to inform them, give them the rationale. Even though I know there'll be disagreement, I figured, people know where you're coming from. If they know the why, then by and large, they'll work with you.
Just another element of Ready to Play Week. Got to talk to Mayor Q for a little while. Bill, tell everybody again what ShareWaves is trying to do and how that has changed right now, why Ready to Play Week was important to you to make it this week as we are dealing with so many things right now.
So ShareWaves is the charitable arm of Union Broadcasting, 810WHB. We are a passionate organization, love sports. We came together and decided that we were going to try to impact kids with the power of sports, knowing that sports has a way of creating opportunities for kids to learn life lessons that will serve them throughout their lives. You know, it's our hope that every child has a chance to play sports. Our mission is very simple: advance opportunities for kids to play sports. And we mean that. We want to find ways to bring some sort of level of the playing field, so kids that are in low-income families, low-income households, have the access to the kinds of sports that every child has. It shouldn't be a haves and the have-nots. It shouldn't be that, you know, to have access is a privilege. access should be open to all children to be able to experience games like hockey and soccer and basketball and football. But there's a difference. There's a difference between being able to give a kid a soccer experience or a basketball experience and give a kid a experience playing lacrosse or golf. And kids in low-income families, they don't have access to sports that are considered the country club sports, and that's unfortunate, and that needs to change. Shareways is here to try to do something about that. And Ready Play Week, you know, it was our idea to try to bring about some sort of energy around the idea that this summer kids are without their normal support networks. All of the different nonprofits and organizations, youth sports organizations, have been severely damaged by COVID and by this stay-at-home order and by what's happened with the shutdown. And they're struggling in a mighty way. And one of the things we've been able to do all week is feature several stories with local nonprofits and tell people exactly what's happening on the front lines of this this pandemic with our kids. And the Boys and Girls Club's at about a third capacity. Operation Breakthrough is operating about half capacity. The Upper Room, which serves 1,500 to 2,000 kids a week in the summer, is not offering their services. Those are huge holes, and those are huge things that need to be responded to, and Shareways is trying, working really hard to bring about some information, bring forward some knowledge about it, but also try to do something about it with our fundraiser.
And right now, if you want to be a part of the fundraiser, what's the number they can text again?
Ready to 26989.
26989, you can text the word ready, or go to 810whb.com. You can click on the auction that's going on right now. It ends in about an hour from now, and I'm looking at the pages right now. Some of these things are much, much lower than I would have expected them to be, and I can't do anything to fix all these, but you can. 810whb.com, click on the link and go check out the auction there, see how you can support Sharewaves, and many times over, add something very cool to your maybe your Chiefs collection or a handful of other Kansas City sports-related things. It's very cool stuff that's currently way undervalued right now.
Well, when you say cool stuff, we're talking about signed authentic Super Bowl helmets signed by Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Unbelievable. signed jerseys from some of the best Chiefs players. And in some of these pictures that were captured, having a picture of watching, you know, Patrick Mahomes celebrate with the Super Bowl trophy, that's one thing. But having it signed by Patrick Mahomes,
An Andy Reid one right now that's at $100.
Yeah,
it's a framed picture of Andy Reid just holding a trophy in the Gatorade dunk, and he's signed it, and it's at $100 right now.
Yeah, that's just
robbery. One. I just picked one. There are several that are right around there. 810whb.com. Click on the link to check out the auction. Ready to Play Week. Share Waves. Bill, I appreciate it as always.
Oh, you're the best. Thanks, Josh.
Josh Briscoe here, filling in for Seren Petro. You're in the program.
The program with Seren Petro.
I want you to take your hand out of that bowl of Fritos, throw away your National Enquirer, and pick up the phone. Go ahead, pick it up. Talk radio.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Just a minute here before we go back to football. Ben Lindsay of Pro Football Focus will join us here in about 5 minutes or so. But can I sell you on the latest invention from Taco Bell? How would you feel about the grilled cheese burrito?
Yes.
Right? There is a pressed cheese exterior with all its melted grilled goodness, according to TacoBell.com. Then after biting in, your taste buds will be swept away by the nacho cheese sauce and shredded cheeses on the inside. The grilled cheese burrito was at serious risk of being labeled cheesy. God, but this burrito is redefined cheesiness. It owns its greatest attributes. The grilled cheese burrito makes a statement that cheese is meant for literally everywhere. Hey, Taco Bell, I don't think cheese is meant for literally everywhere. I don't want cheese literally everywhere. Pro Football Focus next.